You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
American Gothic, Grant Wood's 1930 painting, has come to symbolize patriotism and small-town American values, and I guess it's been parodied more than any other painting except perhaps the Mona Lisa. The artist often described himself as a farmer painter and cultivated the image of a self-taught and unsophisticated man, but a new biography of Wood reveals him to have been a closeted homosexual who studied in Paris and lived a bohemian life before returning to live and work in his native Iowa. Grant Wood, A Life, is published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it brings its author, R. Tripp Evans, to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks.
You're a professor of art history at Wheaton College in Massachusetts, and I am assuming that there were lots of possible subjects for you to have written about. What led you to write about Grant Wood?
Well, I teach Wood in my American art survey courses, and for years it had always struck me that there was more to the man and certainly more to his paintings than I was really finding in the literature. And I began an article about a portrait that Wood did of his mother in 1929. And the minute I began to really scratch the surface of his family life, I knew that there was a story there.
Well, he was very famous. He's probably more recognized than many artists who would be considered more important in the history of art. Has there ever been a biography of him before?
There was one 2 years after he died. Wood dies in 1942. And the first biography, until this one, the only biography of Wood, came out in 1944. There have certainly been monographs about his work done since then. But Daryl Garwood's Artist in Iowa in 1944 was the only one.
And did he know the things that you know?
Well, he hints at and kind of elbows the reader about Wood's sexuality. And it's one of the reasons why Wood's sister, Nan, was infuriated about the book. Nan was his model for American Gothic and the executor of his estate. And it was really Nan that kept other biographers from writing about Wood.
She died in 1990, so she kept the image of him as some kind of a naive painter alive all those years? Why would she want to do that?
Well, I think largely she wanted to protect him from charges about his sexuality. She was constantly talking about how her brother had not been a sissy, was the way that she put it. But I think she had a very specific kind of iconic idea of who her brother was, a simple farmer painter, an untrained guy, a sort of small-town boy without any kind of intellectual pretension.
So how did you gain access to the papers?
Nan, when she died, left them to the Smithsonian. So luckily I was able to go through Nan's papers, which actually include Wood's own unfinished autobiography. It's never been published. It's a fragment, but it was very helpful.
And how open was he? Because we are talking about the 30s, a different time in this country, a time when most gay people would be closeted.
Right.
And he even pushed that a bit. I mean, wearing those farmer's overalls kind of suggested a macho image.
Right. No one wanted to hide Wood's sexuality more than Wood himself. I think Wood was terrified of, really losing his career if it came out. So certainly a lot of this image is not just Nan. It's Wood himself who is sort of fostering this image. And certainly in his own writings and the way that he talked about himself, he's often sort of putting up that smokescreen. And the overalls were kind of part of that.
He lived with his mother and his sister for many years. And then he got married again as a smokescreen.
Well, it's sort of complicated. Wood lived with his mother until she died in 1935. She was 77, and had shared a home with her all those years. Wood meets Sarah Maxson as his mother is dying, and so I think it's both a smokescreen, but he's also replacing his mother when he marries Sarah, and it shocked everyone, including his mother,
because everybody kind of knew. I mean, did people in town, the small Iowa town, know that he was gay?
They did. And, that was the biggest surprise of my research. It's been something of an open secret in art historical circles that Wood was gay. What I was not prepared for was the literature in the 30s in which you see people fairly openly referring to it in gossip columns. Certainly it's veiled references. But everyone in town really knew what the story was, which was why when his wedding was announced, it just completely kind of wigged out his contemporaries.
Well, what about his wife? She must have known.
I believe Sarah did. Yeah, I one of the great archival discoveries I made with this was Sarah's unpublished memoir, which no one had seen other than her landlord, who is still alive, is in his 90s. And in reading through it, it was clear to me that Sarah knew what she was getting into. She called their marriage an understanding of two people who were devoted to the arts. There was nothing particularly romantic about the way that she described their marriage.
Do you think that understanding his sexual orientation changes the way his paintings should be interpreted?
I do.
Does it matter?
I do, and I think that it's central to Wood's identity and certainly central to the way that he painted. There are ways in which we can see Wood's sense of himself, having a sort of public self and a private self, playing out again and again and again in his works.
But we don't talk about that when we discuss Leonardo or Michelangelo, both of whom were gay.
Well, certainly there are scholars who do. But in Wood's case, I think that because this has been a topic that people have not really wanted to tackle, as opposed to, you know, the multiple biographies of Michelangelo and Leonardo, I think that there are ways in which we can see his works in a fresh way, knowing what we know now.
My guest is R. Tripp Evans, who's written Grant Wood, A Life. It's published by Knopf. Let's go back. He was born on a farm in Iowa in 1891, and when he was 10, his life changed radically.
Right. His father, who was really the central figure in his life for those first 10 years, dies rather suddenly when Wood is 10. And it's an event that Wood never gets over. In his mature paintings, his work tends to look back to a period pre-1901, which is the year that his father dies. And when he's commissioned to do his autobiography, he goes along swimmingly until he gets to his father's funeral. And the autobiography stops. He was never able to write beyond that point. And, you know, I believe he never quite got over that event.
Did he already show – had he already shown an interest in becoming an artist? Because I don't know how many farm kids are even in contact with art.
Well, Wood began
his – I know I'm going to get angry mail from people saying, I grew up at a farm and we knew all about art.
Wood was initially self-trained. I mean, he talks about learning to draw under the kitchen table where his mother hid him. His father took a dim view of his son's interest in art. And Wood is an accomplished impressionist painter for about 20 years before he paints American Gothic when, you know, he's a much older artist. He really was painting in an entirely different style.
Before that, he moved to Cedar Rapids, where I assume – which was the big city nearby, and worked in decorative arts, jewelry design, interior design, metalworking. But when did he decide to devote himself totally to painting?
Well, Wood had a lot of potential professions early on. He actually had paying clients for interior decoration from the age of 15, which led to metalwork and other kinds of, you know, mural painting. I think he always wanted to be a fine artist and ends up saving up for a trip to Europe, goes to Paris in the 1920s.
Which was the center of modern art at the time, but mostly the new abstractions.
Right, and Wood was a very old-fashioned painter for 1920s Paris. I mean, to paint in the Impressionist style in 1920s Paris was kind of hopelessly backward in terms of the avant-garde. But Wood comes back and becomes an art instructor for a junior high school.
But he also went to Munich and Germany. The approach to art was very different in those days.
It's true. Wood goes to Germany in the late 1920s to oversee the manufacture of a giant stained glass window he had taken on as a commission. There are some scholars who believe that he looked at the Neue Sachlichkeit, the new objectivity painters in Munich. It would not surprise me if he had, given the sense that they, too, looked back to Northern Renaissance masters.
Who are we talking about then?
We're talking about the sort of generation of
Otto Dix and people.
Yeah, exactly. Otto Dix and
George Grosz,
and some of these figures who were themselves looking back to medieval art.
And then adapting it for, in a modernist way.
Exactly.
Now, but when he came back, he went to Cedar Rapids. He didn't come to New York or Chicago or San Francisco, where he might have found a more welcoming gay community.
Well, I think what happens is Wood very much wants to get out of Cedar Rapids in the 20s. He goes again and again to Europe. What happens is almost a kind of devil's bargain. He gets back in 1930, still competing really in state fairs mostly. And American Gothic hits bigger than any painting has ever done before or since. And I think it anchored him in Cedar Rapids, kind of branded him.
Well, how did he come to paint it? You say it became big.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, somebody saw the painting and said, this is something special. Was it suddenly on magazine covers?
It was. I mean, Steve Beal, who wrote a great book about American Gothic, was the first to show that it had actually been rejected by the Art Institute's jury for their annual American show. A trustee put it back into the show, and critics could not get enough of it. It was not just a hit at the show. It was published in Berlin and London and New York and San Francisco. It was unprecedented.
And it's become – the word iconic actually applies here, and I always wondered why. There is something special about it. What do you think it is? Does the title help? The title doesn't refer to the people.
Wood claimed that it did. I mean, it's the architectural style of the house behind them. He claimed he wanted American Gothic people to go with an American Gothic house. But I think that the source of its kind of power is that people can't quite put their finger on what it is that moves them in this.
But it also looks like he might be making fun of these people.
Right. And there was that accusation at the time. People were afraid that he was really taking a shot at Midwesterners, which I don't believe he was. I think he loved Iowa and he loved his family too much to do that.
How many people – most people assume that the man and woman are a married couple. How did he describe their relationship?
He ultimately came to describe them as a father and daughter, although initially when it was reported as a husband and wife, he didn't correct those charges in the beginning. So Wood himself kind of goes back and forth. I will say that his sister, who was the model for the female figure, I believe stood in for his first choice, which was his mother, which would have made it look much more kind of age appropriate.
And then the man was his dentist?
The man was his dentist, Byron H. McKeeby, who, regretted for the rest of his life having posed for Wood. It just, defined him in a way that he found profoundly annoying.
Well, people lived off of being Andrew Wyeth's model, so I guess there are two sides to that story.
Sure.
Wood also painted a number of scenes relating to U.S. history, like Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, the birthplace of Herbert Hoover.
Right.
Were these straightforward depictions of the subjects, or did they have a satirical bent?
They had a satirical bent. They had strange elements in them that sort of go against the grain of the stories he's depicting. Herbert Hoover is a perfect example. The birthplace of Herbert Hoover is buried in the painting. You have to really know where this house is to find it. Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, he erases the signaling lights from the steeple. Parson Weems' fable, he actually puts Gilbert Stuart's portrait of Washington on the head of a six-year-old boy.
You find homoerotic imagery in some of his landscapes like Stone City and Fall Plowing. Weren't they just seen in the past as bucolic landscapes?
Well, they baffled critics in Wood's time. They are so mannered that critics couldn't understand that this was the same artist who did these deeply realistic portraits. They're childlike, incredibly simplified images of landscapes. More recently, people have seen them as a kind of reflection of the human body. My argument is that given Wood's likely erotic tastes, we are looking at male bodies rather than female bodies. He never painted a female nude that exists.
He died at a fairly young age, the day before his 51st birthday in 1942. What did he die of?
He died of pancreatic cancer. It was really swift. He was planning a major retrospective for the following year, which turned out to be his memorial retrospective.
And do you have a sense of where his work was going?
I believe that Wood's work had really sort of found its place in his mature kind of hard linear style. I don't know that the fortunes of his work would have continued to rise had he lived. Certainly regionalism was very much eclipsed within the preceding
decades. Did he think of himself as a regional painter a la Thomas Hart Benton or John Stuart Curry?
Not before 1934. That's when the dealer Maynard Walker kind of invents the term regionalism. But he certainly advocated painters painting what they knew, painting their native landscapes.
I saw an editorial in the Des Moines Register that had the title, "Now, as much as ever, Iowa is proud to be Grant Wood Country." And the state may have turned out to be more progressive than Grant Wood thought, because they were one of the first to approve gay marriage.
Right. Yeah, Iowa is a very progressive place, and it actually was surprisingly so even in the 1930s when Wood was there.
He taught art at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. Do we see his influence on the work of artists who followed?
Well, he had a very fraught relationship with his colleagues at the University of Iowa. He's celebrated now as a great figure in the department's history. At the time, his colleagues wanted nothing more than to have him tossed out. They really resented his fame and resented his sort of lack of credentials.
Was he an abrasive guy?
No, he was about the nicest guy you could possibly have met, which is why this pitched battle became particularly ugly, given the kind of guy Wood was. He didn't fight for himself very easily.
Now, you didn't stick American Gothic on the cover of the book. You have a painting that looks rather cartoon-like.
This is an unusual painting from 1935. It's called Death on the Ridge Road, and it shows a car accident that is about to happen around a winding country road. Wood rarely did a contemporary scene, and he rarely did action scenes. And I wanted to use this for the cover of the book because it's a perfect illustration of the crash that was always about to happen in his life. He was always sort of in white-knuckled anticipation of exposure or threats to his career.
Although it's a bird's-eye view, whereas American Gothic is head-on. The dentist does have a long face similar to the man in the painting, but his sister has a kind of a squarish face or more rectangular face, and mm-hmm. he's elongated hers as well.
He has. Nan had a very round face, was very fresh-faced and attractive. He really distorted her looks in this.
He almost makes her look like something out of a Memling.
He loved Memling. He loved 16th-century portraiture. And he ultimately, in 1931, he paints a straight-on and very beautiful portrait of his sister, Portrait of Nan, to make up for her portrayal in American Gothic.
R. Tripp Evans's biography of Grant Wood is called Grant Wood, A Life. It's published by Knopf. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.